promptly past 1:30 in the afternoon here on TSN 1290.
We can't go back and talk about the lockout again.
Well, I bet you we could. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website for all your latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the program. He's our good friend from ESPN, Craig Custance. Craig, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
How's it going? So do we still have to say the triple W before websites now, or can we just say illegalcurve.com?
You know, it's probably... It's a good point on your part.
If we never get Drew to say less, we're happy about it.
Yeah. It just rolls off my tongue at this point. It's just, I don't even realize I'm saying it.
I like it.
Yeah, and Craig, Drew's pretty new to the internet. He's still on dial-up. He doesn't really understand computers, so I always have to show him how to use the keyboard.
We actually tried to get, before the show, we tried to get Drew to say HTTP,
backslash. I mean, might as well go all the way with it, right?
Don't give me any ideas. You might regret this coming the next time you're on the air.
Seriously.
Craig, we spent the last 90 minutes talking CBA because, well, there's nothing else to talk about. So, obvious first question for you. What did you think of the two sides and the negotiations this week and the respective offers that each side both put forward?
Well, a couple of things struck me. First of all, when we've had a little bit of time to step away and relax and just actually look at what happened this week, I'm a little bit optimistic because we saw some progress. If you just kind of let all the rhetoric float aside for a minute and you just say, okay, we didn't know where these two sides stood going into this week, and now we know that the owners are willing to get to 50-50. We know the players, regardless of, or depending on what you think of the math of their offers, are willing to get to 50-50. I don't think financially we're really that far off, to me, if you just get, obviously, I know the players are really disappointed with how quickly the league shot down their offer, and I understand, it doesn't look good, the optics don't look good, but if you kind of take a step back and you say, okay, we're getting a little bit closer to this revenue split, I take that as a positive. And what I hope moving forward is that we get something that's a little less public, that hopefully there's some back channel talks or the big four, as Pierre likes to call them, are talking to each other kind of privately, because I didn't, the whole specter, the making the offers public and all that, we probably could have done without that. I don't think that's showing a lot of progress, but I walk away kind of, I don't think we're going to play 82 games, but I think we're going to get a deal done here at some point.
Do you think, Craig, Donald Fehr having an open invitation to the player for the players to be there and the players that did partake in the negotiation, do you think that he saw that as possibly galvanizing them because they're not privy to too many negotiations like this, and clearly it only lasted a short period of time and the owners were obviously hell-bent on getting their point across? Do you see that as his attempt maybe to help galvanize the group even further?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I mean, you bring these guys and you give them a first-hand look, and they can go back and report to teammates. And, the interesting thing that's happening is, I guess this always happens, but it seems like the people that are involved and the players that are seeing up front and up close how things are being kind of playing out, is you just see there's a lot of vitriol towards the commissioner, and these guys have just really, they come out of these meetings, and especially with how quickly this was dismissed, and I don't know if you guys saw the comments from Sean Horkoff, and I forget what Edmonton paper it was in, but just saying, they watch Gary on TV, and they're just, so livid at his answers and how they treated, and I think that does nothing really but unites the players, and it gives them, there's certainly some transparency from the PA's perspective there. But at the same time, I think I mentioned this another time, but Bob McKenzie's tweet really said it all to me the other day when he said, essentially, these deals typically don't get done when you have all kinds of people in the room.
Right.
It's going to take, the commissioner and Bill Daly and the Fairs kind of sitting down and knocking this out and closing the gap a little bit.
You almost get the impression that Fehr kind of had an idea of how it would go because, he says the door is open. And I'm not taking sides here at all. I think they both have, good points. But he says the door is open, yet they've had so many of those four-person meetings that it kind of appeared that he had an idea of exactly, and which owners were invited to this meeting, how that would all play out.
Yeah, it was still, we're still seeing the hardliners out there, eh? So,
right,
it wasn't like they were rolling out some moderates. And I had one source tell me yesterday, he said, that he felt like the league's offer and making it public was a PR move strictly. And then he felt like on the flip side, the PA's offer back was kind of just like a, you know, screw you to the league. Right. You know, basically, he didn't think a lot of any of it was really sincere. But I think that's a little bit harsh, because I do think, especially that third option that gets us closer to 50-50 from the player's share. I mean, that's the positive here. I mean that's what you have to look at.
These guys always work well, Craig, on deadlines, or, you know, there's obviously a season deadline, an 82-game season deadline. I'm sure right. There are many more. But what do you think is the real deadline here for these guys to get something done and on the way?
You know, that to me is a great question, because I struggle with that a little bit, because is it truly, you know, what's that cutoff, and at what point does the league, you know, are some of these offers have to be changed dramatically if you're not going to get 82 games or at least a significant portion of the season? And so I think that really is the fear at this point moving forward, is that if there's not a deal struck that at least you're able to play 82 or something close, if we don't see something happen relatively shortly, then it's going to be a really long time. Like if they start whacking, you know, games well into November, and they got to cut out the All-Star game, they have to cut out the Winter Classic. If that all happens, now all bets are off. You have to really rework that first year of these offers, because you're talking about a pretty dramatically different revenue stream. And if that happens, then, you know, we may be digging in for a really long lockout, and I think that's kind of the worst-case scenario here.
You're listening to TSN 1290 and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Craig Custance of ESPN.com.
Craig, you know, a few minutes ago you mentioned the NHL, you know, publicizing the offer to the players. What were your thoughts on that? Do you think that they were right in doing that?
Yeah, I guess it depends on what their motives are, right? I mean, on some level, like, I don't know if I've ever seen that happen in a negotiation like this high of stakes. But, you know, we did a podcast on Friday with Scott Burnside, Pierre LeBrun, and Katie Strang, who've all been kind of on top of this as well. And you know, Pierre raised a really interesting point, and he said he talked to some agents and some players who felt like that was the league's attempt to have all of the players see the offer, and they wondered if without doing that, if some of these players would only have to kind of see the filtered version through the PA. And so this was a direct line. It had nothing to do with the fans, or not necessarily that much to do with PR. It was an attempt by the league to make sure every single player saw exactly what was on the table. And because, I mean, I guess the belief being that there's guys that are pretty close to ready to want to play, and if they see that the league is willing to get to 50-50, then maybe that'll put some more pressure. But, and I don't know whether or not that worked, because, you know, I think the players remain united behind the union and the NHLPA and the guys who are doing the negotiating. I haven't heard any, like, grumbling or players wanting to split, but that, to me, may have been the motivation there.
Craig, I think it's pretty clear from most people's perspective that, you know, if the owners were to offer the players their full value of the contracts they signed, there's a deal to be done pretty quickly. Why shouldn't the players expect to get paid for exactly what they signed for?
That's a great question. I don't have an answer to that one. I think a lot of people feel that way, and you know, that's you saw some of the comments coming out of the negotiations where that sounds like that's where the league has a little bit of wiggle room, and the phrase that we keep hearing is making the players whole in these contracts. And I think Gary has publicly said, you know, that he invites Donald Fehr to call him, and maybe that's something they can talk and how to handle that, because the way the players look at the last offer from the league is that essentially the players are paying themselves down the line to make themselves whole in these contracts. And so that really is the fight. They don't want any rollbacks. They're willing to make concessions on how the revenue is split moving forward, but they want to get paid for these contracts they signed. And because if the flip side to that is if they don't, and the plan all along was to do some sort of escrow or some sort of rollback, then you question these guys that went out and signed all these players and had these press conferences and the Parises and the Suitors and all this money handed out. I mean, if that was done kind of knowing or expecting that you're going to get a huge discount or a rollback, I mean, that's kind of tough for the players to swallow. So, I have a hard time blaming the players for wanting to get paid for contracts they signed.
Craig, the focus is on 50-50 here, but there are also many other portions of the CBA that's been put forth by the NHL, you know, limiting free agency, extending arbitration to be more difficult to get to, and, you know, certain other portions of the CBA. Doesn't seem like those would be as easy to filter and for the NHLPA and to come to an agreement on as maybe people think. Where do you think that all sorts itself out?
I think you can hammer some of that stuff out fairly quickly. I mean, if they can figure out a way, maybe they gradually get that split down to 50-50. So if we're talking 53, 52, 51, 50, you know, in a 6 or 7 year deal, then all of a sudden you can negotiate some of these other things. And I mean, you look at what were the owners trying to do there? I mean, they were trying to fix the huge jump in salary that players get in their second contracts. And, you know, I've talked to players, and there's some that are like, yeah, those contracts are ridiculous for some of these guys. And you know, you're dividing revenue up. And so I think there's people within the union that are like, maybe the players that are more established, that have been longer, should be getting the bigger deals and not the guys that have only played a couple years.
But don't you do that by extending entry-level deals as opposed to shortening them?
No, but if you split if you shorten it and then you make it, you know, 28 years old before you're free agent, you're putting that gap there. And so if you shorten it, maybe you have less time to establish yourself as a star. I mean, a lot of these guys have that big third season and they're getting paid. And now, you know, I guess depending on when arbitration comes in, and you create that gap between when you would be unrestricted free agent, with the last offer was 28 years old, and when your entry level expires, I think that's another way to curtail it. And I don't think there's any way that the players would have approved like a 5 or 6 year entry level. I think that's and on top of that, I don't know how you lure some of these European players over. If you're a Russian standout 18-year-old and the entry level deal is a 5 year deal, you're making, you know, nothing compared to what you can make in the KHL. You'll never get those guys. So I don't know if that's a realistic solution there.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Craig Custance of ESPN.com.
You know, Craig, we were talking about revenue sharing earlier in the show, and you know, I've talked to a lot of people, mainly fans, about, you know, and obviously everybody's fed up with this current lockout, and obviously it's already gone on way too long. But a lot of people are saying that if the owners own the teams and the players play the games, why do the players want to have such a say in revenue sharing? What do you think about that?
Well, I think the reason that the players want to have such a huge say is they don't want to be back at this negotiating table in 6 or 7 years and having the league say, you know what, we have all these teams struggling still, we need to take even more money. So I think what they're trying to do with this revenue share is to say, all right, we want to fix this a little bit more, and we want to do it in a way that it's not all money coming from the players. It's some of these big market teams that can help, you know, spread the wealth a little bit. And so the fear is if you don't address revenue sharing and you don't address this problem where these there are teams losing money. I don't think anybody's going to deny that. And so if you don't fix the system a little bit so that these teams are made whole, then you're going to be back at it in 6 or 7 years with the league saying we need more money to make this happen. So I think it's a preventative almost by these players in trying to have a more robust revenue share so that we're not doing this again in 6 years.
Craig, we'll let you go on this last question. Look into your crystal ball. When does this get resolved, first of all? And if so, when does it get resolved?
Well, I've been saying, you know, that's the question you get asked the most. And I've been saying since the summer, January 1st, and now I'm starting to see the way things are playing out. I don't know if that's realistic. I think it's going to be either really long or we're going to get it done in the next couple of weeks. So I'm going to switch, and I'm going to go back and say we're going to kick things off with that American Thanksgiving game on NBC. And so I'm optimistic a deal gets done here. I don't think they're going to be able to get all 82 games, but I think we can kick things off with the nationally televised game on Thanksgiving Day in the U.S.
You can read more.
That's just a guess.
You can read more of Craig's work on ESPN.com, and of course you can follow him on Twitter at www.twitter.com/CraigCustance.
Nice.
Craig, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Craig.
Thanks for having me, guys. Always fun.
Take care, Chris. Take care, Craig. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ezzy, how did you manage to get your headphones wrapped around your ankle? You can't answer right now because you're trying to extricate them from the wheel of the chair. But this has really been impressive of you. In case you missed any of our interview with Craig Custance, you can download it on iTunes, search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Richie, you were just stepped away for a second. You missed Ezzy somehow get his headphones trapped under the wheel of the chair.
We've been in the studio for 2 years.
Yeah.
And I still can't figure out how to use my headphones, how to plug them in. All I know is I have a microphone that has a TSN logo in front of me.
2 year anniversary in 2 weeks.
And I talk into it. That's all. The headphones are a big issue for me. I need like Beats by Dre or something.
Welcome back to the program. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. We've gone through the NHL's offer. I think we've gone through it in pretty good detail. Would you guys agree with that?
I'd say that's pretty good detail.
I think that's pretty good detail.
Nobody needs to go into that much detail.
Spending 90 minutes on it. The NHLPA's offer now. Obviously, we don't have the full text and the full offer because they didn't publicize it. That's their
offers,
correct.
Plural.
That's their prerogative.
That is their prerogative, for sure.
Yeah, just like Britney Spears. Remember, she had that.
There was a
song
cover
called
of
My Prerogative.
Cover of George Michael. Yeah. Right?
I think she's on The Voice now, looking good.
I have no idea what either.
She's on the reality show now.
Yeah, she's on
Judges, The Voice, or whatever.
Apparently, Rima says it's X Factor.
X Factor.
Yeah. Same thing.
Okay. Continue, Drew Factor.
Okay.
As he was on The Body. So they listened to him talk. They didn't actually look at his body.
NHLPA put out three offers.
Or they looked at him, sorry, and they didn't listen to him.
NHLPA put out three offers. The first offer, we'll call it the fixed share offer. Very similar to the first offer that they put out a number of months ago, saying pretty much the NHLPA is guaranteed X number of dollars. It's not a percentage. It's X number of dollars, and they're going to be guaranteed that.
It's like when we go out and order food, you're guaranteed a fixed portion of the meal, like the nachos, and then we get the only other 43%. Right, Ez?
Yeah, it's exactly how it is. Yeah. And Drew doesn't budge either. He doesn't negotiate.
Yeah, he doesn't give three offers. He gives one.
For the first 3 years of the NHLPA's offer, they would be guaranteed a certain number, just like they were in their previous discussion. They'd see a small raise from year one to year two, and then year two to year three.
Yes.
But after year three, their salary would be frozen at that number until the share hits 50%. So it's a gradual check down from the 57%.
Right. Now, you don't know if the share might hit 50 before they even get there.
That's right. You don't know exactly when it'll happen. Right. It depends on how quickly league revenues grow.
And you assume with this...
And first of all, there's also a very...
After year two is when...
The NHL...
Canadian deal.
So, exactly. The TV deal for Canada. Yeah. The problem with that, obviously, is that the NHL is pretty much insistent that... They get down to 50-50 immediately. No gradual step down.
Their last proposal, there's no wiggle room there.
If the NHL would agree to a gradual step down to 50-50, there's a deal to be done tomorrow.
That's right.
They refuse. It has to be 50
tomorrow.
Now
they refuse.
Right, now. We'll see exactly how much, But the truth is, once they start losing games, the offers only get worse from the owners to the players.
Usually, yes.
I mean, they don't come back. Rarely is a situation where the owners are struggling after the revenues are beginning to lose.
I just don't see, though, how Donald Fehr would really want to give up any of the issues we were talking about there in terms of free agency and arbitration, though. Maybe I see his bigger issue. I just don't see Fehr budging too much on any of that stuff. Unless the NHL just putting that out there as a smokescreen and don't actually care and are fine with the system as it is.
Well, and it's really significant.
Aside from the 5 years, I can see maybe Fehr saying, okay, five, six, seven, that kind of thing, okay. But aside from that, I'm not so sure he's going to want to budge on any of that stuff.
But Richie, the reason why Gary Bettman, looked at this and said, no, you're talking $300 or $400 million here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're...
The first offer's a no-go.
The first offer is not even close.
Because it also accelerates 50%, and they get a guarantee.
Fixed dollar amounts in years 1 through 3, taking their share to under 51% at the end of 3 years.
Right.
If hockey-related revenues grows at the historical average of 7.2% per year.
Right.
It's a lot of growth, for the record. But
yeah, I don't know where that growth's coming from.
7.2% per year? That's a great return on investment. In years 4 and 5, the NHLPA would...
NHL IPO?
Yeah. Well, I mean, did you read the article on Deadspin about Bain Capital wanted to buy the NHL?
Yes, I did. Illegal Curve linked it, of course.
Yeah.
I don't know if the NHL's for sale. But.
Well, this was back in 2004. They got a presentation from Bain Capital. It never went anywhere, but...
Doesn't Bain Capital buy companies that are about to go out of business? Isn't that kind of what they do?
There's the companies that are in need of restructuring... Long story short, we're not going to get into debate, but companies that look like they're
ripe. Thanks, Candy.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Companies that look like they're ripe for an investment. We'll leave it at that.
Okay.
In years 4 and 5, the NHLPA would accept 50% of hockey-related revenue as long as the player's share wouldn't fall below the third-year level. So that's, their benchmark is whatever they're at in the third year, they don't get any less than that. If, that would... that would assume, I think, that revenues would go down, right, which isn't really likely. If hockey-related revenue grows...
I don't
grows,
see any teams cutting prices anytime soon.
Yeah, very true. And when teams eventually pack up and leave the terrible markets they're in,
of course,
revenues will go up, as we saw
the
with
Jets
the
Jets have a kicker for their prices, you know, 2-3%.
3% every year, yeah. So. If hockey-related revenue grows faster than the 5% Gary Bettman has said, the NHLPA receives an extra increment, but share would still be based on 50%. So they sort of get a top-up bonus, I think, right, is really what right, it boils down to. Player concessions, again, this is, you know, the NHLPA's accounting numbers, so sure, take it for what it's worth. Player concessions total $800 million if hockey-related revenue grows at 5% a year, $1.1 billion if hockey-related revenue grows at the historical rate of 7.2%. What it means, basically what that says is we're giving back $800 million, you know, if... because we're no longer at 50%, 57% of hockey-related revenues. Now, that's a nice big number, but there's no chance they're going to be at 57% of hockey-related revenues. They wouldn't. There wouldn't be an NHL for a number of years if the players just
exactly right,
dug things in. So
that's the whole idea of, you know, we're negotiating from scratch. Really, you can use the former stuff as a base because clearly it's easier that way, and you've practiced it, but you don't have to.
But anybody that comes out and parrots these numbers and says, well, the players are giving back $800 million, yeah, they might be on paper, but that paper would never turn into reality.
Right.
After today, or after September 15th when the lockout started, there was no chance that the NHLPA was ever going to get anywhere near 57% for the rest of eternity.
Yes, right, that's correct. So and they're not going to get anywhere near 54% either.
Of course. So saying that we're giving back all this money is true based on 57%, right, but when 57% itself is never realistic, you might as well say we're giving back $5 billion because you're just picking numbers out of the air that have no basis in sort of a real world negotiating situation.
Right.
You know, and that's why option one still has some similarities to the first option they gave, but isn't going to fly.
Right.
It's just not going to fly because it doesn't get down to 50-50.
Right.
And the only offer that really gets down to 50-50 is the third option. And that's the most contentious of the three. But before we get to that, we'll do offer two. Why don't we do offer two after the commercial
sure,
break?
Let's do it.
We'll come back at the top of the third hour. We'll do offer two. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment of the program is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in Manitoba. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org or give them a call at 204-477-1256. The CGA Association of Manitoba, we see more than numbers.
I think it's very apropos.
Yes,
that we are sponsored by the CGA because this is just all numbers and accounting. Yes. It's unreal.
Our show always has a good
numbers bent.
Yeah. Numbers bent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well put, Drew.
We like numbers. Yeah.
We do. We do like numbers. Numbers give information.
Yeah. Just call us the Rain Men.
Oh, boy.
Remember? that was actually soundboard, Drew.
Yeah,
not
was that
real.
A drop of me making fun of Ezzy? Okay. Proposal two from the NHLPA to the National Hockey League.
Oh, boy, Ezzy.
Players would receive just 24.7% of new revenues each season as their share of league revenues shrunk over time to 50%. If league revenues increased at 5% per season, the players would receive 55.5% per in year one and 50% in year five. Let me ask you guys this question. I mean, first of all, I don't even really want to get into that because it's not a plausible offer.
Or English?
Well, that's a separate issue entirely, but should the NHLPA, when they counter-offered the NHL's proposal, spoken the same language as the NHL in terms of should they have come back offers that...
I mean, they're as far apart as maybe some people think. I don't, personally. I mean, option two, if you look at the numbers, and Myrtle looked at the numbers, they're not that far apart. In terms of actual like players share at the end of everything.
You know, it's called, Elliot Friedman calls it the milestones option. He says the faster revenues grow, the faster the player's share goes to 50% and the more money NHL saves. So if league revenues grow at 5% per year, player share will equal 50% in year five. So again, the gradual check down. To get there, the player share equals $1.883 billion. So they guaranteed $1.88 billion, which is the same as last year.
Right.
Plus 24.7% of any new hockey-related revenue.
Yeah, but the problem with these, both of those options and the third option to a lesser degree, though.
He's calling this offer the milestone one.
Option two is the milestone one, this offer.
These are still, Drew, you're still talking about the difference when you have 57% of hockey-related revenue. The reason why these were basically thrown out the window is because you're still talking about a couple $100 million that the NHL doesn't want to give up. These offers to me are, how can we possibly not get to 50%? Right? Is that not it? I mean, you look at, and again...
Well, the players will say that they're getting to 50%, but they're just not doing it as quickly as the owners want them to. And, I mean, I don't fault the player. It's a negotiation, so why...
One is not going to fly. Two or three could be platforms.
One is based on the first offer the NHLPA made that had no traction whatsoever.
That's right.
Let me continue with the other points in option two. Once hockey-related revenue crosses the $4.21 billion level, so about $900 million more than they had this year in hockey-related revenue. First of all, these are huge numbers that we're talking about.
Big numbers.
Just mind-blowing numbers, especially. I said it at the beginning of the show, especially in terms of the NHL.
Going to be outpricing the common fan. Not that they already have, really, but...
Really outpricing them. Yeah. The player once you cross the $4.22 billion level, the player's share is equal to 50% of levels suggested by 5% annual growth.
This goes to your point that you've always been saying, a 24, and Sean McDonald said it 2 weeks ago, 24% pay cut of a massively increased salary isn't really a 24% pay cut.
Well, somebody on Twitter, I think, said it, you're being asked to lose 7% of the revenue you're entitled to. But when your revenues have grown by 70% in the past 5 years or 10 years, how much are you really being asked to lose? Technically you're losing, but you're still way ahead of where you were a decade ago.
In year one of the current CBA, the salary ceiling was $39 million, right?
And then it went up to
$64 million. So your salaries have gone up every year. So now, basically, what the players are saying, if you want to look at it from another way, instead of just saying, okay, we don't want to have our salaries rolled back, is your salaries have gone up every year for 7 years. Now, we don't want it to necessarily go down. We just want it to stay where it is. Well, unfortunately, the NHL owners have the option of saying, no, you're going to go down now. So, I don't really sympathize with the players because their salaries have gone up pretty nicely. Since the last CBA, I believe the average salary has gone up $1 million. It's not bad.
Exactly.
I think my biggest area of sympathy is not the right word, but the area in which I understand the players' argument the most is you just signed us to these contracts. Why should we have to take a pay cut?
I'm not saying they should.
I'm not saying you're saying it, but I think that's, for most people, I think they understand that concept.
Yeah,
it's not like the business is struggling. It's not like the business is struggling. It'd be one thing if, they're losing money hand over.
That's the thing. Some teams are.
But those aren't the teams that are signing these guys to the massive contracts for the most part.
I know. Florida, Nashville and Phoenix aren't exactly throwing money around.
Nashville was with Weber, but.
But I mean, that's they had to.
They had to.
True.
There.
Their hand was.
You're right.
Florida's not signing anybody big.
Phoenix isn't because they can't.
Isn't.
Well,
I want it, Scott!
Wouldn't the simple answer to that, Drew, being because the owners are taking all of the risk? This is their there is no industry.
Well, there's a letter to the editor in today's Free Press. I think I can pull it up here. I believe it was written by a guy named Bud Ulrich. If you remember back, Bud Ulrich, I think, had an idea, if it's the same guy, and I don't know for sure if it is or isn't, had an idea about creating sort of a new hockey league to compete against the NHL. And I believe he wrote a book about it. I don't have the name of that in front of me.
Rink of Dreams?
I don't know what that is.
Like Field of Dreams was a joke. That wasn't funny.
And he says in his letter to the editor, and he makes some good sense.
Where's the train?
And he says some good sense, and he makes some good sense in it. And he says, the owners take all the risks. they take all the risks associated with running the business.
Mm-hmm.
The owners who incidentally take all of the risks of the business investment have proposed a 50-50 split. The players don't have any risk involved in this whatsoever.
Well, that's the other idea is, you know, for many companies, if you sign some, you know, there are bonus structures, but if you do sign somebody to a new contract and it happens to be that the business takes off, well, that's great. But when you renegotiate your contract, you can take that into account, right? Now, there's other employees that make more money off it. So, I mean, it depends. I realize the contracts are guaranteed, but, you know, if you don't necessarily get the same guaranteed. You don't get the same guaranteed percentage every time. So I'm talking about the employees as a whole more than anything now.
The book is my father texted me. He's the book is called Crushed Ice.
Crushed Ice. Okay.
Crushed Ice.
Right.
Kind of like you have in the fridge.
That analogy wasn't exactly on point, but I guess the idea is that you know the guarantee that they get of income of the business every year, and when you're signing those contracts, I mean the players have a better an advantage as opposed to other people who are negotiating, and they don't know exactly what the business is making, and they don't get a guaranteed percentage of it. You know, it's very rare that that's the case at all.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting into exceptional circumstances here, and so people can't really relate to them because they don't get, you know, you don't go and Eddie doesn't go negotiate a contract and say, well, I want to see what the books say, and I want the employees here want a guaranteed 35% of income.
And I've said that.
Revenue.
I've said that for a while now, that the biggest mistake the NHL ever made, and professional sports in general ever made, is actually tying percentage of salary to revenue.
Right.
The owners should never have agreed to it. The owners should have said, we're going to give you X dollars. We're going to give you $100 even if we're making $1,000, whatever it is. And if you don't like it, too bad.
I agree with you, Drew. And didn't the NFL deal really set that precedent, though?
No, the NFL deal is tied to revenue.
No. I mean, like, the NFL deal setting the 50-50 precedent for the
NBA.
Way back in the day, sports have always been tied, you know, salary caps or whatever have always been tied.
Like, the 50-50 number.
But Bettman was the one who was part of that negotiation for that first tie, wasn't he?
It was it's a mistake that professional sports have made for decades now. Why should the two things be related? You know, I'm going to pay you this amount. If you don't like it, go play somewhere else.
There's no
that's
other
free market.
There's
that's
no
what I've
other
been arguing for the whole time.
There's no other industry that I can think of where anybody can say
yeah, you can't, I
form
can't
a union and say I'm worth 50% of whatever revenue you bring in. If anybody can correct me, I think the professional sports industry, the Big Four, is the only place where that happens. I don't even think that happens in the entertainment Hollywood.
Well, they're paid for what it's worth. I mean, if you make a ton of movies, ton of great movies that make a fortune in Hollywood,
and you
get
paid
more.
You might be able to contract, like Lemieux did even, like, you know, before the cap, you contract, you get part of the team, and now he wanted to get paid. But the idea is big movie stars will sign a contract and say, you know, I get this much guaranteed, and I get this percent of the revenue of that deal. You know, that would be a certain, it's not every movie star gets it, the best ones get it. So that's the other issue. But again, the NHL opened the door. Remember, they even offered them a hard cap last time. Not tying revenues to salaries.
And the NHL,
turned it down.
And
that was the genius turned it down.
And that was a fundamental 46.
Mistake. 46.7 hard cap up until now.
That's right.
Boy, they would have been bathing in money.
Well, they had no idea revenues were going to go up like they do. But it's astounding that they turned that down. They couldn't see 10 years down the road.
Yeah.
And if they had been able to see 10 years down the road, the way that sports as a property increased dramatically.
Well, Twitter didn't exist.
Television
didn't exist.
Right. Drew wasn't married.
PVR was in its infancy.
Yeah. If they had been able to see that television revenues from sports alone would go through the roof, they would gladly have taken that deal.
That's right.
It's a mistake that the owners in all professional sports have been paying for.
See the players and them arguing. I mean, the players are going to get a guaranteed income. You know, they have guaranteed contracts, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like the other employees who you see out there, and I realize they are the attraction, so there's obviously a distinction to be made.
Right.
But again, a lot of people don't have guaranteed contracts when they're working, and they get fired. They get 2 weeks' notice and see ya.
Yeah.
These guys get guaranteed. You don't want Wade Redden on your team. You signed to a $6 million deal. Well, you got to pay Wade Redden, so you got to play somewhere.
Right. But that's the problem that we're facing.
The NFL has non-guaranteed contracts.
That's why it works.
And they have huge TV money. That's why it works.
Well, sure.
But non-guaranteed contracts, too. I mean, you know, the owners don't have much rights at all.
The
so.
Players with non-guaranteed contracts, the players are disposable.
That's right.
And, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not polite to talk about people that way, but they are.
Their careers.
They're commodities. They trade them. You know, well, you're too expensive now. You're not performing as what you used to. I'm going to replace you with a newer, better model. That's all it is. It's not personal. It's just the way it, I mean, that's just the function of the...
So when you're coming in here with guaranteed contracts...
Yeah.
So you sign a 10-year, you sign a 5-year deal. You're getting that 5 no matter what, unless you retire.
Right.
Why would you retire?
Well, that's why, I mean, Chris Pronger hasn't retired. Why would he?
He'd be on IR and get the money. Same with Savard, obviously.
Yeah, these guys are like, well, if I retire,
entitled to.
I don't get my money, but if I stay...
I think what we're saying is that the all in all, then... There's certainly no sympathy necessary for the players and their plight. You know, again,
nobody's taking tag day for them.
Let the people know they're getting their escrow checks. The escrow check is $79,800, I believe, is the exact figure. And that goes up to them, I believe, on October, in the next week or two. They get $79,800 for every million. So if you're Vincent Lecavalier, those $10 million salaries, you get...
$790,000. Just under $800,000.
Now, that's their money from, you know, before, but you're going to get that, so it's going to be able to hold you over, you think. Now, the guy who makes a million and gets $79,000 and lives like he makes a million, maybe champing at the bit.
Yeah, if you live hand-to-mouth on every single contract.
What Patrick Ewing says on Rome, Jim Rome says it all the time. We make a lot of money. That's back in the old lockout, 99. We make a lot of money.
But we spend a lot of money.
We spend a lot of money.
Well, I mean, maybe you should save some of that cash there. Who's the player who had his Twitter? Chris Bartsch, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, maybe you should save some of that money that you're making.
Well, Chris Bartsch has no issue with money because if he keeps drinking OV, he's not going to spend any of it.
Exactly. Yeah. Just drink less expensive beer. That's what I do.
Less expensive than OV?
Right. Or if you're Jeff Paulson's coming on from Sleeman's, I got some free beer.
That's right. And I actually had one the other day when I went to Desi's.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk something other than CBA. We're going to talk Movember. It's a good cause. We're pleased to be a part of it.
Yes, and we're happy to talk about something.
Drew's going to grow a nice big mustache.
Drew's going to lock out his razor for the month of November.
When we come back, Jennifer Botterill is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
I have to quickly make a correction. Our friend Kev... It's texted me and told me that's not, in fact... Well,
a couple
not
people...
George, we've not had, George Michael, it's Bobby Brown.
Yes, a number of people have actually tweeted us about as well. Okay. So we do appreciate that everybody who tweeted in correcting us on...
That's the impression that I get.
Yeah, the George Michael versus Bobby Brown question. We do appreciate that very much. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, shortly past 2:15 in the afternoon. We're pleased to welcome a couple of different people onto the program at this point. To my immediate right, joining us in studio is Jeff Paulson. He's the co-chair of the Movember Winnipeg movement. And joining us on the phone, I believe from Toronto, Jennifer Botterill is also involved in the Movember movement as a supporter. And she's going to be in town tomorrow signing some autographs. Jennifer, thanks for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure, of course, is all ours. Let's start with how did you get involved in Movember? Do you have any personal interest in it, or is it just something that they approached you with, and you were all too eager to sign up?
Oh well, no, I was thrilled to get involved. I mean, I think we all have family and friends that have had health issues or scares, and this is something. It's an important campaign to get involved with, and it's about creating awareness. So. For me, when I had the opportunity to get involved, for me it was a huge honor, and it took me no time to decide at all. I was thrilled to get on board.
That's terrific. You're going to be in town tomorrow signing autographs from noon to 2 p.m. Both yourself and Stanley Cup champion Mike Keane are going to be signing autographs at the Source for Sports located on Pembina Highway. And if you purchase, they have some special Movember-specific hockey sticks. Jeff, I'll bring you into the conversation here. Can you sort of explain the Source for Sports and what's going on there with the specific hockey sticks?
Yeah, absolutely. Sherwood has created a Movember-specific one-piece composite hockey stick that they're selling exclusively at Source for Sports stores across Canada. The sticks retail for $99, $15 of which goes to the Movember cause. I've got one of the sticks myself. It's actually... quite good. I enjoy using it quite a bit, and we're really excited to have these really cool initiatives happening year after year. It seems like something new happens all the time, and it's got more sort of intrigue and whatnot. So we're pretty pumped up about Sherwood getting involved, as well as Source for Sports, and more specifically, we're extremely thankful that Jen is going to extend of herself tomorrow and be part of the event down at Source for Sports at 2077 Pembina Highway, and sign some autographs and see some people, and hopefully sell some sticks, register some folks for Movember, and raise a little bit of money.
Now, I should mention, you mentioned register people for Movember. It is the official opening of the registration for Movember tomorrow, is that right?
Sort of. It's our first local event. Registration has been open for some time now, but tomorrow is kind of our first of many registration drive type events. So we'll have information on hand for people who want to get involved, whether they want to do so as an individual or as part of a team. And it should be a good time.
Now, I know that Illegal Curve has signed up to be a sponsor of Movember, and we're going to promote it on our radio show and on the website and everything. And this question is for Jen and Jeff. Movember, obviously, we know in the hockey community, has gotten bigger and bigger every year. Could you guys just maybe touch on how big it's actually gotten and what some of the other events and drives are related to the Movember movement?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll just speak to it first, I guess, but I know that across the country it's grown in terms of different programs and different initiatives, and it's great to see. I mean, I think Manitoba and Winnipeg should feel proud that the people here really do jump on board and have a huge impact, but it's great to see across the country with every province that it's expanding every year, and it's just really nice to see that.
And I'll just sort of expand on that too, in that I think that the automatic assumption when we hear Movember is we associate it, and rightly so, with prostate cancer. For years, the sole beneficiary of Movember efforts was Prostate Cancer Canada. Movember has since this year added men's mental health as another beneficiary of the fundraising efforts. And when you start talking about the hockey community, obviously there have been numerous issues within the last year and a half or so that men's mental health have had a lot to do with. And I think that'll probably go a long way towards seeing the hockey community really rally around it that much more, given some of those unfortunate events of the past year or so.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking Movember. We're pleased to be a sponsor of Movember this coming year. We're joined in studio by Jeff Paulson and on the phone by Jennifer Botterill. She's going to be signing autographs in Winnipeg tomorrow afternoon. Jen, we've spent the last, over 2 hours, 2.5 hours almost now, talking the collective bargaining agreement, and we figured we'd bring you into the conversation. You played hockey. You're obviously one of the most decorated Canadian Olympians of all time. You probably played more so for the love of the game than you did, a financial windfall, at least compared to the average NHL player. When you see them negotiating and arguing about the sums of money they're arguing about, what's your sort of take on that? How do you feel when you see the negotiations unfolding?
First of all, it's tough to see because in terms of, the excitement of the game, and I guess I feel first and foremost for the fans of hockey and the fact that they don't get a chance to see the NHL played right now. So for me, I think it's unfortunate that it's come to this point, that both sides, couldn't come to an agreement before now. I do understand the business side of things, and the reality is that professional hockey at that level, it is a business, and both sides have their arguments and things that they feel very strongly and they believe in. So in that sense, I understand they need to find some common ground. I guess I feel disappointed, and it's unfortunate for the game that it comes to this. We haven't had quite the same issues in women's hockey just yet. But I hope for all people's sake. I miss the game. You miss seeing players of that caliber play, and that's what's disappointing.
Your brother's not listening. You can side with the owners if you want, Jen.
The capologist now, yeah.
I know, Jason. I know. Well, he's, I guess all sides are just hoping at some point that they can work something out. Well,
Jeff, let me bring you into this. We like to think that to some extent we're the voice of the fans, and that the fans can filter their opinions through us. You're a fan of hockey, obviously. You're sitting right next to us. Millionaires and billionaires arguing, as the expression cliche likes to go. What are your feelings on it?
I find it impossible to sympathize with the players. They're making gobs of money that most of us could never dream of, playing a game that a lot of us pay money out of our own pocket to play each year, and do so, hopefully, and get nothing but enjoyment out of it. And my position is the owners are exactly that. They're owners. I have people that own the company that I work for, and they make the decisions, and I've got two choices. I can either abide by them and deal with it, or I can find something else to do. And it's that reason that I have a hard time sympathizing, like I said, with the players. I think that 50-50 is more than generous. It's I think it might be even a little too generous, for you, to tell you the truth, from an owner's perspective. And I think they should be glad to be able to live the types of lives they do, playing a game they love, and just get over it and get on with it.
Because we talk about, you know, 50-50, we talk about revenue splits, but Jen and Jeff, looks like, looking at the numbers of how much Movember's raised, since 2004, globally they raised $50,000, and 2011 it was $125 million, just shy of $126 million. Can you talk, I guess, about the growth? Maybe, Jen, you can start off first, talk about the growth of how much has been raised, and maybe if there's targets in the future.
Yeah, you know, let me jump
on. Was it for Jeff or Jennifer?
It was for Jennifer, but it can be for either one of you.
Okay.
You know what? I personally can't speak to global projections, but what I can speak to are projections that we have, or goals that we have, let's say, here in Manitoba. We would love to see a scenario unfold this year where we had 10,000 registered Mo Bros or Mo Sistas, mm-hmm. In the province of Manitoba, and funds raised from our province, you know, sort of north of $1 million would be our goal for this year. That's pretty lofty, but given the growth of the past few years, we think it's quite achievable, and given the way that we've seen the people rally around the cause of the last few years, you know, we really think that that it can happen. And I think more importantly, you know, a lot of guys that grow Mo's in the month of Movember, they do so and that's it. But what's more important is we want to get the message across to those guys is that's great, grow the mustache, right. But also join the cause. Register right. at Movember.com, be part of it. You don't have to raise a bunch of money, just be part of the team and feel good about it.
Jen, let me ask you, you know, sort of, generally speaking, if I don't shave for a few days, I look a little greasy. You know, I'm
you greasy
know,
right now.
I haven't shaven in a couple of days. Admittedly, I have a bit of a beard, a bit of a scruff going on. As November, you know, gets deeper into the month, and you see all the guys who are participating in November, and they sometimes have, you know, their beards and, or their mustaches, and some are better than others. You know, from a woman's perspective, if you see a guy wearing a greasy looking mustache in November, does he sort of get a pass for that because you know it's for a good cause?
There's no doubt he gets a free pass. You know, I don't think there'd be many girls' first choice for a year-round thing, but no doubt there's a free pass for the month. But in that sense, I feel like everyone, I mean, it's so good for awareness. I mean, it's, you know, I think people have a blast taking some pictures of the stashes, and it's great to see because it does. It represents people that are getting on board and helping people, you know, with important issues.
You know, Jen, Jeff mentioned that we're trying to get both Mo Brothers and Mo Sisters involved here. So is it not just important to get women, you know, involved with this movement, you know, along with men?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, you know, I was so honored to be a part of it. And, you know, it is all about, you know, education and awareness. And so that is across the board. It's you know, I think on with men or women, it's important to raise awareness. And for me to get involved and to help with that was a pretty special opportunity.
One final time, Jennifer Botterill, you're going to be in town tomorrow. You're signing autographs along with Stanley Cup champion Mike Keane at the Source for Sports located at 2077 Pembina Highway. It's all in support of the Movember cause. Jennifer Botterill on the line, I think, from Toronto. Jeff Paulson next to me in studio. Thank you both very much for the great work you're doing with Movember. A Legal Curve, I can speak for everybody in the room, is proud to be a part of this as well. And, you know, we look forward to it being a great month coming up in November and really everybody having a great time and doing, you know, great work for a great cause.
Thanks very much for having us.
Thank you.
Take care. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Bobby Brown brings us back from commercial break. Big thank you to Jeff Paulson and Jennifer Botterill for joining us.
Jeff's a great guy, and I think he was telling me that he was on, he had a hockey show on this station, I believe, or KY58, when the Jets went to Phoenix. He was telling me. I didn't know that.
Really?
Great voice for radio, let me tell you.
Yeah,
good guy.
Yeah, actually, he was holding my chair to make sure he didn't steal my job. Yeah.
And he's now supplied me with even more free Sleeman's beer. Jeff works for Sleeman's. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and your doctor definitely doesn't approve of that, but that's okay for another day.
You know I don't go to see the doctor on a regular basis.
Yeah, we definitely know that. Okay, we have one final proposal to get through, and then we can put the CBA discussion.
Like the proposal that you gave to Laura a couple of years ago?
In Kentucky.
It's true. I did get married, yes. And
It was December 21st?
It was December 24th.
It's pretty good.
Not
Christmas,
bad.
Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve.
Very romantic, Drew.
Well, you pretty, know, pretty good.
I am nothing if not romantic, let me tell you.
Hopeless.
Hopeless romantic. Thank you, Richard. Proposal 3 from the players to the owners. The players propose that 13% of revenues would not count toward the player's share or the salary cap, and are instead used to pay the existing contracts in full. The remaining 87% is then distributed among players as part of a 50-50 sharing of that same revenue. The NHLPA indicated this option would involve both sides receiving a 50% share by year 5, but that was disputed by the league in a press release. Now, this is the most interesting of the three offers.
Right, sure.
For a couple of reasons. One, it says 50-50, and it's a legitimate... Well, it's 50-50-esque. In that
more
the
legitimate
first,
than the first two.
Well, in that the first 13% doesn't count. Secondly, interesting...
But by not counting...
It keeps all the contracts that the owners signed and the players agreed to, valid.
But not counting, then you don't take that into account when you're calculating the subsequent years. So that means 13% is then spent by the owners again, because it's available to them. So they're kind of, so it ends up being over 50%. Don't get me wrong. I mean, if the owners want to be, they want to take advantage of that, fine. But then don't blame it for not being 50-50, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
What it would do is it sort of creates a two-tier system in the NHL, in that contracts that have been previously signed and agreed to continue to live under the 57-43 breakdown.
And as Elliot Friedman said, that's what they did in the car.
And business. That's the Canadian Auto Workers' most recent contract went to the same concept. Previous agreements are in effect. And they are in effect until they run out, until they expire. And then all new agreements are under these different terms. The NHLPA is saying pretty much the same thing. The contracts you guys agreed to, the contracts you signed, are valid until they expire. Mm-hmm. And then every contract following that is 50-50 going forward in
the
future.
The problem is that 13%. The owners want the players to pay it. The players say owners should pay it. And they still can't agree on what happens to it anyways.
Right. And what, like Richie said, this one is probably the best three out of the proposals, which obviously wasn't accepted by Gary Bettman and the NHL owners. But this is the issue. This is what the issue has become. There's going to be obviously that debate over the length of player contracts, UFA age, entry-level deals, all those things. But as far as this hockey-related revenue and how to split it up, it's going to have to be who's going to pay that 12%. And really, I mean, at this point... If it means somehow, whatever accounting you want to use, if it's, let's say, 52 or 51%, and then they have to get to 50%, you know, in year 3, you know, I think the owners can budge a little bit here. They're each going to have to budge a little bit. There's hundreds of millions of dollars here. You know, that 13% is hundreds of millions of dollars. They're not arguing here over, you know, $400.
Well,
you know,
obviously.
This is a large amount of money, and each side is entitled to it, really, if you think about it, because... The owners signed the players to these contracts at the previous salary cap. What the owners are essentially saying is, we want it now. The players are saying, you know what, we'll give it to you in year 3, maybe.
To me, this contract, this third option, seems like there's some tangible opportunity there to come to an agreement.
Yep.
Under those... Obviously, with tweaking involved.
But then do you black out the 13% from spending in the future? Like, do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, but obviously it just means... I mean, I don't know the exact answers, obviously.
Right.
But it seems like what the players want... It seems like this is both sides getting, to some degree, what they want.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Well, the players get
it's farther apart. I think the wording makes it 50-50 and 50-50 on both sides, and okay, it sounds good, but we talk about 13%. Being paid, and as far as I know, unless I'm wrong here, Drew, it doesn't get counted against the cap in the future, right? The problem there then is 13% sounds all fine and dandy, but 13% of 87%, of the 100% is still a few hundred million dollars. It's something like $600 million?
Yeah. I understand, but I'm saying, I mean, obviously it's not going to be this exactly.
It wasn't that much, obviously, but...
But, you know, the owners get their 50-50 on all new contracts. So if your contract expires next week, you know, you operate under a different sort of salary.
Which is fine. Yeah. Which is fine. On a prospective basis, it makes a lot of sense. But, you know, retroactively, you're going to try and change all those contracts. And can you? Or will they agree to it? So probably not. So, I think that
they have to agree to something eventually.
Yeah, well, exactly. And so,
I mean, they have to agree to something eventually. So, I mean, the problem is, I honestly, with both, you know, what do you think the finished product here is going to look like?
I honestly don't know because there's so many options here, and there might be a wild card that both teams are holding in their back pocket to throw it as a solution they think is the most reasonable. I don't know, but I think that the NHL will honor these contracts.
And Richie, even though we kind of see where this is going more so now, even though, I mean, we saw the start and we saw the finish, and then there was nothing in the middle. Now there's something towards the middle, or maybe in the middle. But you also see, okay, well, if the NHLPA is going to agree to a bigger cut, and they're going to not necessarily give up the guaranteed contracts. I mean, the contracts they want paid for, in the very least, the first year, which the NHL is saying, well, obviously we'll do that if you agree to a 50-50 split. But there's going to be something here that has to be given. Revenue sharing, you know, the free agency thing, you know, it has to stay the same. The entry-level contracts, okay, if we're going to go down to 52%, for example, or lower in the first year, the NHLPA is going to say, okay, well, yeah, then you got to throw in that two-year...
That's a good point, Esty, because don't you have to go at 57 to 53, 52, all that kind of thing, and then account for that money, and then eventually... Like, that's the most reasonable option. That's what we've talked about at length here. If the NHL is hell-bent on going 50-50 immediately, then they have to account for those contracts. And the question is, I think they will because the PA will force them to. I think the question is then how do you account for it in the cap? And then that's when you get back to the 50-50 or 55-45 and all that problem again. You know what I mean? So it's you're working in circles here.
You can probably work all of these things in circles. Let me read this paragraph from Elliot Friedman. He wrote an article about this third option. You know, he was the one who referenced it back to the Canadian auto workers and how they're...
It's a good article.
It's a great article. Remus, you can tweet it out on our Twitter page, @IllegalCurve. It's titled, NHL Labor Solution Could Come from Auto Industry.
Just had Buzz Hargrove run the whole thing.
Well, he tried to. He wanted to get involved when the NHLPA was going through their
Didn't Buzz Hargrove didn't he land on the moon?
No.
Oh, sorry.
If the NHL is really...
Buzz Aldrin.
Yeah. If the NHL is really serious about a...
Chip into those beers and get Buzz? I mean... Yeah.
If the NHL is really serious about a make-whole provision, and by serious, I mean making it very clear that the league... Not the players will take financial responsibility.
Of course.
Right.
This is where the plan can work. Make it part of the package for players who already have a contract, and I'd bet someone else's firstborn child that we'd have serious traction. What that might mean, though, is the players bending on some of their contract issues. But again, if the NHL came at them with a serious proposal along these lines, I'd be curious to see the reaction.
But sure, I understand that. But the question then is, where do you account? How do you account for that money?
There's
you have
enough
to scale it down, then, don't you?
Probably, logically, your comment makes sense to me. Because is that you'd have to scale it down?
I keep saying what they're doing is they want to go to 50-50 immediately.
Yeah.
And they say, okay, then you know the PA says, okay, pay those contracts anyhow. But then they're taking that 13%. They're accounting for it, so then it cuts out for the other percentage.
I know. It makes your head spin.
It does make your head spin, spinning thinking about this. But the only solution seems to be able to phase it in unless you're going to pay him over a period of time. And then you have to wonder whose share that's coming out of.
I think that if the players who have current contracts would agree to defer payment on that to some point in time, and I don't know what that point in time is. Maybe after they've retired, there's a five-year period where a portion of their...
Who gets interest on it?
Well, the player should get the interest on it. And if the owners were responsible for paying that deferment till whenever it kicks in.
Okay, if players are getting the interest on it, then why the owners wouldn't want to do it?
Because they'd get down to 50-50. That's how you work your rollback.
Why don't you just pay it out of scale anyhow and just get rid of it quicker?
Well, I mean, whatever it might be. But that's, instead of making so your contract isn't exactly the same as it's written today. Right. You don't make your $15 million today. But what you do is you make $10 million today, you roll back the 7% or whatever it is to get down to 50-50, and that $5 million, I'm just throwing out the numbers here at this point in time. My math doesn't work.
Yep.
You're throwing that $5 million that you're not actually getting paid
right.
is a deferred payment that you receive later on after you've retired. You know, consider it part of a bonus for a long career in the NHL. You know, it's almost, you know, pension income at that point in time. I think a deferred payment system might be the answer to the current contract problem, because that's really where the problem is in the current, the NHL, the NHLPA doesn't want contracts rolled back. The NHL wants a 50-50 split immediately. The NHLPA will give them that 50-50 split as long as they don't lose any actual value in their contracts.
And that's where they have to move off of, though. That can't, you can't. Under those proposals, and obviously the third one is where you get to 50-50 quicker. You can't. I understand what you're saying. They don't want to. Essentially, Donald Fear's job right now is I don't want to just see money fly out the window. He doesn't want to see these guys that have these contracts. Exactly. It's like, okay, well, owners are just taking that money right back.
And
I understand that. But you're not going to be able to do this over the next 10 years.
Because his point was they got all the free agency leeway last time. Because they gave up all this right. all this power and the cap,
right.
So they're not going to give back the free agency leniency, younger and all that stuff, and then also give back money again.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, one final segment. Hopefully, we can bring some levity into this discussion. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Drew, stop dancing, man.
Don't worry, I'm not
professional.
My father texted me again. I have to give a shout out to Zeta Joe. Zeta Joe's listening as well for that.
Shout out to Zeta Joe.
Yeah.
My boy.
It's a family affair here.
Of course.
Welcome back. Yeah, there you go. Round of applause for Zeta Joe at that.
I think Zeta Joe's our biggest fan. I think he listens to the show more than Sheldon.
Fan.
Actually, no, that's true. Maureen is our biggest
fan. My mom's one.
Shout out to Richie's mom, OP.
Your dad might be two. Sheldon's not even in the top three.
I think Zeta Joe's
ahead of him.
I don't know. Sheldon knows what's going on.
Baba Toots is up there, too.
Welcome back to the Illegal
Curve. She never listens, though.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I see her, she just, you know.
It's like when I first met Richie's Baba, Richie's mom's like, Baba, this is Richie's friend Ezra. She's like, what do you want me to say to him?
Welcome back. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Oh, wait. Am I supposed to do
something? You're supposed to get rapid fire going.
Remo's snoozing.
Oh, wait. Where is it?
Oh, Remo.
Rapid fire.
It's funny, Drew, because you got to give Remo some heads up. You do the quick point.
No, there was a heads up.
That was a quick point.
I told him during the commercial break.
Quick point.
He sent me the show plan. I should have been ready, guys.
I also told him during the break.
I'm trying to stand up for you here.
But you can't defend him there, though.
I'm sitting down, though.
He was dabbling to the Timbits there.
Yeah. Sidney Crosby says he doesn't recall injuring Claude Giroux's wrists, but if he did injure them, he's not sorry about it. Is there any better rivalry in hockey right now? Maybe even professional sports.
Well, hockey right now, yeah, because the league's not going on.
When the league starts
Erie
again.
Otters.
When the league starts again.
Right.
Is there any bigger rivalry right now than the Philadelphia Flyers against the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Let me jump in here. Pittsburgh-Philly last year in round one was unbelievable. You had guys fighting. The high scoring, absolutely not. And we talked about this earlier in the summer because I believe Claude Giroux came out and said, the reason why my wrists are injured is because during the faceoffs, Crosby was slashing me.
Well, he's interviewed by Seth Rohrabaugh of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
Yep. Empty Netters.
That's right, Empty Netters blog, exactly. Rohrabaugh asked, during the offseason, Claude Giroux claimed you broke his wrists while taking faceoffs. Do you recall any plays where that might have happened? Crosby's response, no, I really like to win the faceoff. I don't try to go after his wrists, but if I caught it, I'm not sorry for it.
Yeah.
I think it's hilarious I hear that stuff from Philly. It's comedy to me, to be honest with you. They're probably involved in that stuff more than any team in the league, and they're the ones always talking about it. I guess I'm not apologetic. I was trying to win a faceoff, and if I caught his wrist, then I caught his wrist.
Should be.
He seemed to play okay, so I couldn't have hurt him that bad.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it should be noted that Claude Giroux outplayed Sidney Crosby in that first round.
Absolutely.
Which was a large part in the Flyers advancing, never mind the terrible goaltending on both sides.
So, Richie,
how amazing is that quote from Crosby?
Oh, it's amazing.
Great.
And this is why Sidney Crosby probably more than anybody wants to get back, because he's healthy, He wants to get right back into it. Pittsburgh lost in the first round. They obviously expected to go a lot farther than that. He wants to get back into playing, and that's why, again, this rivalry is amazing, and these are the reasons why we really miss hockey, because we want to be watching our favorite players. Crosby and Giroux, you don't get any better than that.
That was, those games were just incredible, those playoff games.
I had to watch it in Kentucky. Yeah.
Why? Yes, you did.
By the way, just for the record, I want to bring this up again. I was the only person that took New Jersey to beat Philly in the next round. Just throwing it out there.
I didn't pick Philly to beat Pittsburgh, though.
Yeah. The blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then.
What?
It's an expression.
From the 30s. Hold on, did Drew just laugh at an age joke?
That's good. We got him.
Canucks general. Did Remus just get run over by a garbage truck?
Remus, are you alive back there?
Was that a bus sound?
I thought that was Ezzy running over Drew with that joke, no?
Or me crushing all of my empties in my backyard.
Wait, was it?
It was okay. Canucks general manager Mike Gillis downplayed and denied a report from coming out of Toronto that Roberto Luongo trade is as good as done, and as soon as the lockout is over. Is Roberto Luongo on his way to Toronto?
John Shannon said he's on his way to Toronto. I have no reason to believe that he's lying. He seems extremely confident about it. And if you look at the wording, Gillis, said it wasn't close to being done.
Here's the quote from Gillis. Okay. I'm not sure why John, speaking about John Shannon, I'm not sure why John Shannon would say that, because that's certainly not the case. Everyone is entitled to speculate on whatever they'd like to speculate on. We've moved very slowly on any discussions with Roberto. We'll trade him when we get what we want to get for him, or we won't trade him. Either way is fine with me. If we can do something that is going to help us and moves our team forward in different areas, we're certainly going to consider it. But that hasn't occurred yet, so I'm not quite sure why that would be said.
I'm not so sure that Gillis really says, no, we're not trading him to Toronto there. He kind of just says a lot of words.
Well, he's going to two places. He lives in Florida. Yep. We've talked about this ad nauseum. He's either going to Florida or Toronto. And, there's no player movement during the lockout.
Right.
Exactly. So they're just waiting for this lockout to end. And then they want to get rid of this. Vancouver's still in contention for Stanley Cup. So they're going to get rid of Luongo. Corey Schneider is their number one goalie now. So I do think he is going to Toronto.
And I think apparently the compensation hasn't even been decided yet, because they're waiting on the new CBA. That's been the speculation. Right. The new CBA will determine how valuable a certain player is based on his contract.
By the way, Richie, nothing against James Reimer or Ben Scrivens, but the Leafs need a veteran goalie in net. That's exactly what they need. So it's good for Toronto. Toronto Maple Leafs fans should be happy. Well, obviously, he's got a lot of years left on his contract.
Well, remember, though, now this is interesting, though. If this is the case, and they end up, and Roberto Luongo retires in 4 or 5 years... Or six, sorry, like in 5, 6, 7, 8 years, whatever it may be.
Vancouver's
who gets the cap hit based on this proposal?
Vancouver's on the hook for it.
So there's a lot less risk there now.
Sure. When he retires, the risk is you trade for him and he's terrible and he doesn't retire.
Yeah, but his track record would indicate he's not terrible.
No, he's still one of the best goalies in the league.
The Florida Panthers announced their newest ticket sales initiative.
Saw this.
Timing a little bit odd. It's called the Championship Banner Pack.
It's like crazy with the word championship.
Southeast Division Championship. I don't think they're going to win
it this
year. Did
you see that division last year?
They better enjoy that, because Carolina is pretty good.
All too many times I saw that division last year. In which customers can buy tickets to 3 Panthers games and receive a ticket to the Panthers season opener for free.
Yes.
Shouldn't the Florida Panthers be able to sell out their banner-raising home opener without having to rely on tricks of this nature?
Talking about the... So at 50% with Florida and... Yeah, you know what, Drew? Obviously, that's just, I guess, a testament to the way the games go in there. And the lockout will not help at all.
Right, and they, it was good for them to make the playoffs for the first time, I think, since 2000 this year. But if you did that in Winnipeg, people would be literally running over each other.
Remus?
If you offered free tickets to Jets games.
Well, yeah, we know Ez.
But people would be running over each other.
Is that the standard there? Like a banner? I don't know. I guess people would raise the division. But there's so many divisions now.
Last question in rapid fire. Matt Cook is getting ready.
Is there a first round banner now?
Probably. Well, in baseball, they get champagne celebrations when you...
Yeah, because nobody makes the playoffs.
When you clinch the pennant, when you win the wild card, when you win the division.
It's like when I was in an indoor track and field competition and they gave me a participant ribbon.
And then the track collapsed.
Matt Cook is making the best of his time during the lockout. Instead of getting ready for the, you know, the Penguins home opener and things of that nature, Matt Cook is coaching his daughter's soccer team. How many red cards do you think Matt Cook's daughter gets in soccer?
Do you think if Andy was a track star, instead of his name being Usain Bolt, it'd be Insane Dolt?
Oh, my God. Okay, let's stick to the rapid-fire topics because Drew's getting a little bit upset here and enjoying it at the same time. I don't think Matt Cook is going to last more than a couple of games. I just picture Matt Cook just, you know, what was that movie called with Will Ferrell where he's a soccer coach and he throws like...
Kicking and screaming.
Yeah, kicking and screaming.
Man, how many duds has he made since well, what would be, I guess?
Anchorman?
I could see Matt Cook just running out onto the field and, like, you know, beating up a little 12-year-old.
Oh, man. Yeah. Like, he'd be the best soccer coach because he's the best diver.
Something about it. Yeah, that's hilarious.
Here you go, guys. Just jump here when you're not touched. Yeah. And then elbow somebody unsuspectingly and end his career and then show fake remorse about it.
Yeah, I can't one-up Richie on that one.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stick like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Easy cheer. I'm going to cheer the Movember cause.
Yeah.
Great cause. Nice of Jeff and Jen to give their time today. Obviously, it's a... it's trying to get people to be involved and whether to wear the mustache to raise awareness, wear the mustache to, most importantly, raise money for the cause. And people put their time and effort into it, and obviously they're doing it out of the goodness of their heart. So, cheer.
Yeah, I'm going to cheer also. I have to cheer Movember, and specifically, yeah. I'm going to have to cheer Jennifer Botterill for coming on, one of the greatest female hockey players of all time, arguably the best. And Jeff Paulson as well, the co-chair of the Movember.
He's your best friend now.
Any platform where Dave Minuke and I can grow a mustache and, you know, get props for it, that's pretty good for me.
Yeah, Drew, we didn't mention Soch as one of our best fans. I'm happy about it. Soch on Twitter. We got some gears here.
Oh, sorry. I closed my Twitter feed already. I missed that.
Well, we gave out a shout-out to Soch last week for being at the Bombers game and listening, so now we're just giving him a shout-out for continuing to be one of our biggest fans.
We certainly appreciate all of our fans and all the fans who tweet to us throughout the course of the show.
Kind or not.
Yeah, kind or not. Especially if they make fun of one of us, you get higher in our books. Yeah,
that's right.
I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer the Los Angeles Kings. They took the Stanley Cup to the September 11th Memorial in New York. This past week in memory of their scouts Ace Bailey and Mark Bavis, who were on one of the planes that they were on United Flight 175 that crashed into the World Trade Center. Those guys have still made the Kings have always remembered their memory, and they did another good job by bringing the cup to the September 11th Memorial in order to do the proper thing there that they
absolutely
did.
Absolutely.
Good cheer.
So good cheer for the Los Angeles Kings there. That's it for this Saturday afternoon here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests, Craig Custance of ESPN, Jeff Paulson, and Jennifer Botterill. A big thank you to our sponsors, Carbone Coal Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, and the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website for the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. For producer Tim and producer Remus, for my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290, your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.